offering our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's afternoon satsang. If you've been with us in the past couple of weeks, we've been going through the system Swami has placed as part of the education institution that he set up in the form of the hostel of the schools and the colleges. We're going to continue that discussion, but probably we will explore a few other dimensions we have not gone into in the past couple of weeks. Like we had last 2 weeks, we still have Sai Prakash with us, but instead of Arvind, my usual co-computer of the program, I have today Brother Amai from the Institute. So even as you are hearing his voice singing in that song in the background, we're happy to have him speak with us today. So welcome to both of you.
Sai Ram Prem, thank you.
Sai Ram Prem, thank you.
And probably a quick recap of what we spoke about last couple of weeks. In the first session, we went almost through the schedule because we took the statement which Swami would often make, in the sense that Swami would say, the only sadhana that I would like my students to follow is the hostel schedule. If they were to follow the hostel schedule assiduously, and that is more than enough, nothing more needs to be done. It's such a sweeping statement, so we wanted to see, you know, what is the essence behind that statement, why Swami is giving us such a big boon. So we were talking about the things which are hidden in that schedule. Things like how there is a perfect balance between the three types of gunas which Swami speaks so often, and the deep wisdom behind some of these schedules which he has put, some of the prayers which we chant, and what Swami has told on other occasions why we do that. And last week we had the opportunity to go through a very interesting discourse which Swami gave, interestingly, to high school students. You know, when I first went through that discourse, 1996, Swami is actually speaking to school children. You know, that in itself says what Swami expected our aspirations to be, our outlook to be, how we wanted to approach life and education itself. Where Swami spoke about, like to just quote what Swami said on that occasion, because Swami is talking about the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, where he speaks about the Ashtanga Yoga, where you have this Yama, Niyama, and the other, this one, where Swami says, Swami goes on to say that in spiritual sadhana there are 8 yogic disciplines, as I mentioned. Of these, the first is Yama. It is enough if this single discipline is observed. All human values are comprised in it. Humaneness is embedded in it. Yama includes the pancha pranas, pancha bhutas, pancha koshas, pancha tattvas, and pancha rupas. The 5 forms are the forms of Gayatri. The 5 basic principles are ahimsa, satya, brahmacharya, asteya, and aparigraha. Now this is how important this particular concept of Yama itself is. And we went on to see how each of this is, without our knowledge, embedded into that hostel schedule. And we got a small glimpse into why Swami says the hostel schedule is enough. So that's probably from where we're going to take on. Any thoughts about what we've spoken so far?
Yeah, I mean, 96, I think probably I was in my 12th standard. That is in the new hostel, you know, when Swami came to the new hostel, that was when it was inaugurated. And the only thing I can remember of that entire occasion was that we had the function on the B floor terrace and we had Shamianas put up and we were involved in the background decoration. No idea of Yama, Niyama. I mean, many years later, when you go back, did Swami really speak these things on that occasion? Because I remember very clearly Swami climbing up the steps, because that was the only place where everybody could assemble, and we had it on the B floor terrace, and nice decoration and all that. And then we had some songs and programs. But just to sit back and think on the, you know, immensity of the message that Swami gave on that day and what he actually expected from us, it's really amazing.
Yeah, the one other thing that comes to my mind, you know, as I think about this is, Swami has never minced words, irrespective of what the age group was. I mean, just imagine to speak to an 8th class student, about 11, 12 years old, talking to him about Yama, Niyama. Because if you just look back at our own Sanatana Dharma and all our Upanishads, the highest form of Vedantic truths have always been look at the heroes of Upanishads or our Puranas. Prahlada, Dhruva, Nachiketa, Shvetaketu. All of these were little children of 6 and 8. Okay. And in fact, they become the heroes of the Vedantic principle. So, I guess, you know, when you compare ourselves, probably our age of 12 or 13 to a 6-year-old, we should have been reaching, you know, the Dhruva levels or the, you know, Prahlada or the Nachiketa levels. So I think, you know, that's one more beautiful thing that Swami never minced words, and he said, you know, start early always, he would say, start early, drive slowly, reach safely, which in our spiritual journeys also, I think, is such an important message that only when you start early can that assimilation process happen so that you can drive the rest of your life, you know, smoothly, and then you arrive over there. Nothing starts after 60. No, it all starts at 6.
No, another aspect, I mean, when you say there's no mincing of words, what's really important is there's no compromise.
Compromise, exactly.
Absolutely, there is no dilution, there is no, I would say, okay, you are a small boy, let me tell you something simple. No, this is the ultimate truth. And this comes with because of selflessness. You know, selflessness is one aspect, and then selflessness in the other way of looking at it, that he is not looking at immediate results. You know, this is the famous story which Professor Venkatraman keeps telling, and it's, you know, stuck so deeply in me. Swami went to all these villages in the 60s, and he was speaking about Atma, Paramatma, Bhagavad Gita, this, that in every village. And one day Kasturi uncle told Swami, hello, you know, these are farmers. These are farmers. If you tell them how to get a better harvest, yeah, I think that will be more useful for them. They are farmers. They are simple people.
Sometimes we think we know better than the Lord. The agenda.
He said, Swami, will they understand what you are telling them? Swami says, no. Then why are you telling? You know, you are really giving your breath. You are giving your time. You are giving your effort. And you... it's so much of involvement. Why are you giving this to them? He says, they may not understand now, but 10 births hence, they will understand what I spoke. 10 births hence. I mean, Swami should be really proud of us that only a few years later than what he gave the discourse, we are revisiting it again. But I mean,
yes,
few births. Swami is ready to wait for a few births. And because that word of truth, when it comes out from the avatar, it will never go in vain. And I mean, at the cost of taking another 2 minutes, this was one more thing which happened on the veranda. Swami is actually standing and speaking to the students, and he was telling them a lot of spiritual, how they should conduct their life and why boys are not serious enough when he talks about discipline and all that. And so then Swami, you know, sometimes he makes some of the elders also pitch in and then, you know, give some direction to the boys. So he called one of the VIP sitting there, and he just told him, see, tell these boys they should be disciplined, they are not listening to Swami's words. That's all. I mean, that was what the VIP was supposed to tell. Now suddenly the VIP went overboard, and he started telling, Swami, they are not having value for your words. Swami, you should not spend time standing and speaking to them.
My God.
Then, it was a bit, you know, Swami just told him to tell that you should be disciplined, boys should follow what he is telling. But this man just went a little bit across the line, and Swami looked at him, shh. And there was a moment of silence, and everybody was, you know, just waiting what Swami said, this body is Dharma Swarupa. And every word I utter is absolute truth. There is not a single word that I utter which is a waste, which will go without fruition, which will, you know, which will just go down without an effect. It will have its impact. It will have its purpose. It has its purpose. This body is Dharma Swarupa. Every word I speak is truth, nothing else. I mean, at that moment, you know, we just have to sit back and think whom we are living with. But the beauty is when Swami speaks, and then immediately we don't see results. We think that nothing is happening, but it takes its time.
I think one other thing that I remember while we were speaking about the fact that Swami, you know, Swami was always, you know, at that I am the Atma level. But there were always times, I think, somehow when he stood at the discourse table, you know, he simply rose up to the level of God. Because I think it was it was being, you know, recorded for posterity, right? And these discourses would be, they're not just meant for the hostel, they're meant for the entire humanity. So I think that's how, but when he would stand in the veranda in front of the primary school children, the greatest of truths would also come in the simplest of ways. I remember once when he was giving ice creams, you know, and, you know, he says, all of you like ice creams, just imagine a Sunday morning, hot morning, and Swami distributing ice creams. So all of us were busy eating, and Swami said, it was Joy ice cream, you know, the famous Joy ice creams. So, and then Swami said, do you know, God is like ice cream. And Swami said, he is cool like ice cream. He's sweet like ice cream. He melts like ice cream.
White.
And he's white, pure like ice cream.
Yeah.
Just imagine, he just summed up the entire, means just imagine all the Upanishads, you know, yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasasah, it is said that the words cannot describe the Lord and all that. He simply described the Lord using ice cream.
And when you eat that ice cream, you get joy. And it's joy ice cream.
It is joy ice cream, you know. So he also had the ability, or only he can have the ability to convert the highest of truths in the simplest of ways.
It's very true. In fact, you know, when we speak about some of these saints, like I think, if I'm not wrong, it's Jnaneshwar, who is supposed to have written one of the most profound scriptures on the Gita, on Bhagavad some of Gita. the Upanishads and all that. At the same time, he is the same person who has written some verses which are actually sung by these villagers when they're tilling the land, when they're, you know, on the bullock cart. It's very simple. The truth is simplified so much. Mm. And I think even in academics, that's what we say, you know, someone who can address a hall of scholars, a hall of scientists, and at the same time go to a graduate class and teach in a manner that they can understand. I think that's what Swami did, you know. He does at that level. At the same time, break it down to what should you do now. In fact, when we were doing the program Shravanam Mananam, in one of those discourses, Swami speaks about control of minds, control of senses. In fact, control of mind, not senses also. How you have to still the mind. Towards the end of the discourse, Swami is telling how you should sleep on your bed. You know, how you should stand and listen to a person whom you're conversing with. And he was saying that all this matters. You know, it all builds up to that, and all this boils down to this. The ability that Swami had to break it to this, and of course we were using the word ability, but I mean, he has all the knowledge that there is. There's no wonder in that.
It's also, you know, it's like reflection, reaction, resound. When amongst children I'm a child, when amongst men I'm a man. So that sabha maryada which Swami should talk about, you know, when the society is there, and when he rises up on the discourse table and he sees that entire society in front of him, there people are really looking at him as God, as divinity, as incarnation. Then he assumes that. Because I have seen this, you know, personally, in Hatshi, in 2009, when we were fortunate to be with Swami, he is inside his room, his residence, and we are with him, and he's joking, he's smiling, talking, he's, you know, so free, and he's, after all, our Swami, one amongst us, and all that. Now, the moment he went to the stage, there is a glow, there is a presence about him. You know, because thousands of devotees are worshipping him as Bhagwan, as God. And at that moment, he assumes that. And he is there to fulfill that requirement of the devotees.
In fact, I remember Professor Nanjundaya, sir, you know, telling us in one of our classes. So when he used to translate Bhagwan's discourses, so we were asking him, sir, what was that experience like? Mm. So he says, you know, so obviously the Maya is so strong when you're so close to Bhagwan. So he said, once in Trai Brindavan, Swami was talking about, you know, chutney, some coconut chutney. And apparently, you know, it looked like Swami didn't know the basics of chutney. Meaning, he had to be taught the fundas of chutney. So Ratan Lal auntie had come, no, Swami, actually we have to grind this, then put it inside. Not, you can't put this inside and grind it. Oh, and Swami was so, you know, very...
playing the
intrigued,
part.
Yeah, intrigued. And he was like, oh, is it? Okay, I don't know all that, you know, kind of. And then he comes out, and he gives a blistering, thundering discourse at the summer course. And Nanjundaya sir was, you know, at his wit's end to understand, how is this possible? Here is a person quoting Upanishads. Okay, it means 10 minutes before he doesn't know the basic things of kind of, you know, soak on. So, you know, Swami was in a very special mood that day.
Hmm.
And so he, you know, those are the moments when you can ask, yes, you can have the guts to ask Swami.
Hmm.
So he said, Ranjuna, aim samacharam. So he said, Swami, yatla utundi Swami ji. How does this happen, Swami? So ye me. Said, Swami, you are just so normal here. But you stand at the discourse table and it looks like you're possessed. You know, he used the word possessed. You know, means the kind of things you say, how does it happen, Swami? And you know, Swami's answer was, I'm sorry, I really, my Telugu is so bad, but the beauty, I'll just translate what sir told. Swami said, it seems, naku yepudu yepudu, yedi yedi kavali, that is, whatever I need at whatever time, it simply comes through me. I don't have to put an effort to go to that level. It means if you are thinking that, you know, I'm possessed, and then Swami said, what is this possession you're talking about? Whatever I need, it comes. Okay, I don't have to do a special effort for it, nor do I. So even to be human, he doesn't have to put any special effort, nor to be divine does he need to put any special effort. It's just, it's sahaj. You know, his divinity is a very straightforward and automatic divinity it is.
I think the beauty is that even when you're talking, about understanding, we are kind of, built in with that idea that if I am this, I cannot be that. You know, if you are rich, you can't be poor. If you are sophisticated, you can't be simple. But the whole of spirituality talks about the absence of the binary way of approach. Now, we are always thinking about either it's free will or it's destiny. Either it is this or that. But spirituality, the whole thing is about being that which allows you to be everything. And that's what I think Swami portrayed all the time. But you know, I think if we go on like this, we'll be in awe of Swami's personality and we'll keep going. But the whole discussion is going to be on one system which this personality created.
Yeah, that is true. Because such a person, such a personality, such a Bhagwan, such a Swami, if you would say, gave so much importance to the toddler steps, if I would say, baby steps towards that state of being, of awareness. And he put forward this schedule, he put forward all that we can easily relate to and live with, so that, you know, keeping that as the end result. So, as, you know, we were discussing, that he was the center of everything. You know, he is the center of everything. He is the center of, if students were to study hard and get good marks, Swami will be happy. He will give me an award at the end of the year. If somebody is doing an artwork, so I want to show it to Swami. Somebody is doing music, practicing, getting up 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, I want to sing in front of Swami. You know, everything revolved around him. Suppose he is a good sportsman, I want to perform in front of Swami. So, you know, Swami is the center of all the activities in the hostel and in the institute combined.
And as we said, we spoke about the other four aspects. I think we've already come to that. We've kind of mentioned it. This concept of brahmacharya, couple of reasons, you know, it's very, very misunderstood. And the way it is approached by Swami is also quite misunderstood by many people. You know, especially the Swami's strictness for keeping the gender separate.
Mm-hmm.
Swami, of course, does that even in the public, in the Kulwant Hall or wherever he's giving his darshan. It becomes even more stricter as you go closer to Swami when it comes to students. Because I remember when we were students, whatever be the topic, Swami might be upset about something, Swami would be angry with something. I remember once during one of the servings in the mandir, after the Akhanda Bhajan, apparently one of the students had spilled some food while serving. Swami was very upset. Swami was scolding about that, and it came to this strictness about maintaining a distance from the opposite gender. Because almost every opportunity which Swami had, Swami would drive this in. Brahmacharya, of course, grossly translated, is the ability to maintain that state of celibacy. That's of course there, but it's more than that. And that more than that definition of brahmacharya is actually, in a way, the thing you're trying to reach through this act of celibacy. So probably we can talk about that, why Swami gave so much importance to that, why Indian scripture itself gives so much of importance to that particular phase, before I ask any of you. You know, one of the things which is told in the Bhagavatam about the Kali Yuga, you know, it is said that one of the features is the child will start behaving like the adult will start behaving like the child. And whenever somebody says that, you know, let's keep spirituality for later, let's keep it for the post-retirement. If you look at, as you said, you know, Shvetaketu, Dhruva and all of them, spirituality was the first step. When we say, let us have it after, you know, I've finished all of my enjoyment, it is like saying that what was meant to be done in childhood, let me do it in my adulthood. And as Swami was telling, I think in one of the discourses, he said, in today's life, man is trying to go straight to grihastha and jumping the brahmacharya. You know, from the age of the toddler and the boy, you're going straight to grihastha. You're not going through that path of brahmacharya. And I think that is one of the things which Swami corrected through the system which he placed.
We cannot overemphasize, you know, the importance of this. I think for very, very, very practical reasons, and there's nothing, I'm not able to find anything so controversial in it, though some people may, you know, tend to say that in this day and age, in this day and age, are you not going to, you know, kind of, that's the usual
no
argument,
co-education, right?
That we receive. Just look at, I think, you know, just look at any profession, you know, and here I would like to, you know, mention, we had one Mr. Tombakos from Greece, and he was, he's a great Olympian. I mean, in fact, India has not produced as many Olympic gold medals as Mr. Tombakos has produced. I'm ashamed to say that, but, you know, he is a double Olympic gold medalist. Mm. He's a 3-time European champion and a 2-time world champion, that is at the world championships. And he's a very, very close devotee of Swami, a very ardent devotee of Swami.
Is he the one who actually gave his medal to Swami, which is...
Yes, he did give his gold medal to Swami. Mm-hmm. He gave us also the torch which was used at the Athens Olympics.
We used it for one of the sports meet.
Exactly. And you know, and his relation with Bhagavan was so beautiful. Mm. He said it didn't matter when he came to Parthi whether he got first row or not. He said, I'm seeing God. Is to see God, whether from first row or from the 100th row, it's the same. He's the same God. You know, and here we were running, you know. So we had this interesting conversation after he had won the gold medal and he had come down to Parthi. And, I think it was many years later after he had won the gold medal. And so we were asking him how that whole process was. And he was mentioning that, so the Athens Olympics happened sometime in July of 2004. And from 2003 December, they were having this Olympic camp for the entire Greek, contingent.
Mm-hmm.
And the camp was so strict that they were supposed, so the whole camp was held outside of Athens. And they were not allowed to meet anyone during that 7-month period, starting from December right up to July. Except they were, each athlete was given 3 people's name whom he can contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's almost like a kind of a you're put in a jail kind of an atmosphere where you're allowed only 3 inmates, you know, or rather 3 relatives. Right. And he said, even in those 3, he chose 2 as side devotees and one as his mother, because he doesn't have a father. And, you know, he said, it was only because I wanted to all the time hear Swami's experiences and be in that Swami atmosphere to remain myself, you know, absolutely positive.
Mm.
Now, just imagine, this is an Olympian in Greece.
Mm.
Okay, why would he want to stay alone?
Mm.
Because there is a specific goal that you have to reach. So, I'm sure, you know, you talk to a scientist, people who are finishing up their thesis, or, you know, who are writing a really, really important paper, and they spend 50 hours, 70 hours in a lab at a stretch, not meeting anyone. Right? So, I don't think this brahmacharya thing is really, means, on the one side, yes, it is about, you know, self-control and, you know, sense control. But it's also, I think, about focus. Right? If you want to achieve something, you know, beyond ordinary. For ordinary achievers, yes, not necessary. All of this is not necessary. But if you want a breakthrough, right? If you want to get a breakthrough result in something that you're doing, in any field it may be. In politics, in education, in science, you will have to cut away from the world. You will have to spend those moments in solitude, okay, so that your energy is absolutely focused and channelized. So I think this is one way of, in fact, trying to understand why Swami wanted, us to be absolutely cut away from everybody. In fact, not only just the opposite gender, Swami would also, in a sense, discourage you from meeting your own cousins when we were in the hostel. Right? He would say, try not to communicate with too many people. Why? Because you've come here for a purpose. You've come here to focus on me. Right? When you've come here to focus, and in fact, I remember just one more experience. This Professor Rao told us, during my MPhil time, I wanted to go for a wedding. One of my cousin's wedding. And so I had applied for leave from the university. And Professor Rao was a director. I can never forget this. So I gave, and he says, oh yeah, go and come. I'll just tell you an experience. And so I said, okay. And he said, back in those days, in the 80s, when the university just started, there was one of the professors, similar, he wanted to attend a very close relative's wedding. And so Swami said, yes, go and come. And couple of months later, he was going for another wedding. And this time, Swami just said, Bangaru, why did you leave all of that world and come here? Swami, for your sake. Then what is it in that world which is attracting you now? That you feel like keep going, going month after month. Very, very calmly Swami told him, you came here for me, isn't it? Now what is it in that world which is attracting you more than it is attracting me? He said, this is what Swami told that professor. Of course, needless to say, I cancelled that. Because it just hit me that, yeah, there is nothing out in that world which is more important than Swami. Right? So, I don't know whether now you can, this is being very strict or something like that. But I just feel that when you're getting something which is far more valuable, there's nothing like in sacrificing something far, inferior to something superior. I think sacrifice is when you sacrifice something superior, for something inferior, So I think that is what Brahmacharya truly meant for Swami in my little understanding.
Yeah, as Swami would rightly say, Brahmacharya is focusing on Brahman, being in tune with Brahman. And as you rightly said, every field demands this kind of concentration, this kind of dedication and silence. Solitude and silence is so critical. In fact, a slight digression, one of those days, I think as Sonam sir was telling us, one of those days in the bhajan hall, Swami came and Swami said, does anybody know the poem Daffodils, the dancing daffodils? And by Wordsworth. Then Sonam sir knew it. Swami said, what is that solitude? He says, you are sitting in solitude. He explained the entire Wordsworth poem from an Advaitic point of view. He says, it's pure Advaita.
Swami said he was an Advaitin.
Dancing daffodils. What is the meaning of this? What is the meaning of... Why he should say solitude? Why not in the midst of this thing? I mean, I don't really remember the details, but we should visit it again. But I'm just saying that there is a deeper understanding to everything that we did or what Swami asked us to do. In fact, Swami would say, if you are silent, your memory power will increase. Talk less, have less contacts. That was like the two yardsticks for all students, Swami would often say. And he would reward. There was this element of reward. We started in our class 10th. You were saying to achieve a goal. In our 10th standard, our goal was to get a class interview. So, we said, somehow we thought that being in 10th class or 12th class, we needed an interview because we have to write board exams. And so, we are eligible for an interview. And Swami, please give us an interview. Swami, class interview. Swami, hey, sit down. Wait. Swami would keep saying. Then this was going on for a couple of months. Then before we could ask, Swami would say, class interview, you want? Sit down. So this used to go on. And then, so one day we all thought, what is it that Swami likes? So if we do that, Swami will be pleased and Swami will give us a class interview. So we all decided Swami likes silence. So let us, all of us, keep Maunam for one day. You know, we were in our 10th standard, and I will never forget. So we all decided that it was a Tuesday, tomorrow none of us will talk. We will keep silence because Swami likes silence. And if we do what Swami likes, Swami will give us class interview. That was the thing at that time. The moment we decided that and kept silent, you won't believe, on that day, every teacher who came to the class spoke only about Swami. They were so inspired by the silence. You know, there's between the two periods, one teacher comes out and one teacher goes in, and there's so much talking, there's so much noise in the classroom. There's absolute silence. There's, what happened? Are you all alive, or what has happened to you? Then, you know, somebody would write and say, this is what we are keeping silence because we want an interview from Swami. And Swami told one of the teachers who was, with Swami in the Punichandra hall, Swami told him, in fact, Vednarayan sir was there, Swami told him, my boys are keeping silence for my sake. And sure enough, Swami gave us a class interview. Swami gave us a class interview. So, you know, I mean, this is how he fulfilled. Like, you do it with that purpose. Like, everybody focused on that. Then Swami gave the interview.
I can just share one more experience that comes to my mind when you said this, less contacts. So, actually, he's a very senior member of the faculty now. Mm-hmm. So, he was narrating this experience that he and his brother, for about 3 years that they were over here, immediately after they finished their education, Swami never allowed them to go home for vacation. Mm-hmm. Swami would keep them back here. And whenever they would ask, and their families are very, very old devotees of Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in fact, the grandmother had come and, you know, she had prayed, Swami, please send this boy home. You know, his father has not seen him in 3 years.
Mm.
Please send them home. And Swami said, I will decide. You know, I will decide that.
Mm.
And so for 3 years, just imagine, they had not been. And one of the characteristics of this particular family was that the father was not a devotee of Swami.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he had always kind of discouraged them, you know, why are you, okay, you know, you finished your education, now what's up, you know, what is there, come out. And he would kind of put it in a way that, see, this is how you can spread your Baba's message, you know, come out, you work outside, etc. So after about 3 years over, so they had, of course, they used to enjoy their life over here. For the fourth year, Swami said, this year you go home. And so they were like, what happened now suddenly? Are we out of form? You know, is Swami disappointed with us? Why is Swami sending us? So they said, no, Swami, we're not going. No, I'm telling you, you're going. Okay, so you go and come. Go on such and such a day, come back on such and such a day. Okay, all instructions given. And they went and they had a very nice time. They had a wonderful vacation, the 7 days. They came back. And later on, their grandmother had written a letter. You know, how Swami knows the exact perfect way to do it. Said, before the moment the house, you know, the people at home came to know that these two brothers were coming home. Somebody coming after 3 years. So everybody had told that father, it seems, at home, you don't talk anything nonsense to them, okay? Don't tell them that they should leave Swami. Okay, don't tell them that, you know, what is there in Puttaparthi and all. They are coming after 3 years. You talk something bad to them, no? They won't come. Another 10 years, they won't come. And it seems the whole atmosphere at home, because of that, was one of total joy. And sir was telling us that probably if he would have gone every year, every year there would have been a fight at home. Okay, or there would have been an argument at home, and you know, something would have ended up, you know, spoiling the relationship. By sending us after 3 years, he gave everybody joy at home. See, there is so much meaning when he says, I know when to send. You reduce your contacts, I will ensure that your contacts remain the most beautiful contacts.
Beautiful.
No, I think, so this is, I feel, what is Brahmacharya. Swami never wanted us to, you know, there was nothing rigid about Swami other than the fact that keep the focus on me. As long as you keep the focus on me, everything else will be fine. The world will be fine.
Correct.
The world will accept you.
And talking about this particular thing, because one question which is often asked, especially when it comes to, you know, this gender isolation, is Swami trying to create yogis? Is Swami trying to create, you know, people,
sannyasis?
But in this very discourse we are discussing, Swami speaks about Brahmacharya as the world understands it in the life of a householder. Swami is saying, how will you... You know, Brahmacharya is not something you give up after you get married.
Mm.
Just like how it is not given up, where you maintain it when you are in a student's life, as you said, the importance of focus, the importance even when you speak about... I remember I was once listening to the interview of... There's one William Dalrymple. He's an historian, a very great writer. I mean, all his books are 600, 700 pages and historic works. Like he writes on the history of Afghanistan or India and all that. And he says that, you know, it takes about 1.5 years for him to compile all the facts that he's writing about. Then he takes off 3 months. Nobody knows where he is.
Mm.
You know, he goes off into some retreat or something, doesn't come back, finishes his manuscript and comes back. I mean, if that's what it takes, that kind of focus and concentration is what it takes to write a book. So one thing is, you know, that energy focus which is required when you're a student. And Swami speaks about when you go into a grihastha's life, when you go into a householder's life. Swami says when you are married, you follow Brahmacharya whenever you come in contact with any other woman other than your wife.
Mm.
You know, when you're in the presence of any other woman, you're a Brahmachari. And going a little deeper about this concept, I think what Swami is trying to drive is, you know, there are three things in our life. One is the actions which we do, the pleasures which we experience in the process of doing our actions, and the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem arises is not when you enjoy something or not when you do or don't do something, but when you do something which is divorced from purpose and pleasure. When you seek a pleasure which is divorced from your action and your purpose. I think that's where the confusion comes. Swami did not say that, no, you're not supposed to have any contact with, you know, person from the opposite gender. You're not supposed to do this. You're not supposed to seek this pleasure. You're not supposed to seek this comfort. When that is going to be an hindrance to your purpose, or it's going to be something which is totally tangential to your purpose, that's where the problem comes.
I think, yeah, you've hit upon a very serious note, I feel, because, you know, there's one other issue, understanding of this concept of celibacy, and I think that is our ability to cut ourselves from the thoughts, you know, which the world is throwing at us. And I think the very beautiful story in Sacharita, where Nana Sahib Chandorkar, you know, one of the very close devotees of Shirdi Baba, and it's so beautiful that this is mentioned in the Sacharita. I mean, in such a sacred book like the Sacharita, this particular incident is a very beautiful incident. It seems he's sitting along with Swami in Masjid, and a very rich Mohammedan gentleman comes for, you know, darshan. He comes there with his three wives,
right?
You know, and the middle wife, she removes the burqa to take Bhagwan's darshan, Shirdi Baba's darshan. And just at that moment, Nana Sahib Chandorkar happens to see her face. And she is very beautiful.
Mm.
You know? And the thought remains in his head. You know, that, oh, she's so beautiful. And, you know, and later on he comes to know, oh my God, what have I done? I have committed a sin. You know, by looking at someone else's wife and having, you know, bad thoughts. And so he very openly, he submits himself to Shirdi Baba. He says, Swami, I have made a mistake. He says, what happened? He says, I had bad thoughts, or I had, you know, wandered away, you know, seeing that particular person. And Shirdi Baba said, but the senses just did their duty. Why is the mind now still focused on that? Right? The eyes did their job of seeing. It's the mind which is now holding on to that and saying, this is right, this is wrong, this is a sin, this is... Right? Our ability to cut away. So, what Swami is telling us is not to run away, but to cut away. Right? Even so, I may speak to, you know, to several people of the opposite gender, etc. How much of that am I actually retaining in my head, you know, and thinking and contemplating? I can share one more very, an incident which I should say is, I hope we can understand it in the right perspective, and I pray to Swami. So there was one of our brothers, you know, who wanted to leave the hostel because he said, Swami, the hostel is also making me get attached.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm also getting, you know, I want to cut away from everybody. I want to stay in solitude because I want to concentrate on the Brahman and etc. Mm-hmm. etc. This was in Kodaikanal, 2007. And Swami said this. It's an unbelievable... I mean, just imagine the Lord, he says, that is not what you require.
Mm.
And Swami said, look at my own example.
Mm.
every day I walk into the ladies' side and thousands of ladies touch my feet, touch my hands, and yet I am not affected by it. That is what you need to be. See, this is Bhagwan, this is the Lord Almighty telling, coming down to our level and saying that thousands of ladies touch my feet and yet I don't get touched by it. Right? I think so. To be in the world but not of the world is what Swami always wanted. So here was Swami himself giving an example of so-called celibacy. Okay, what is true celibacy is not to run away or to try to cut away, but not to be affected or be attached by it. Our ability to cut. These are two experiences.
Just reminded of a small interaction, might not be exactly in line with what you said, but just talking about Swami and how Swami drives some of these important lessons. You know, there was this student who was talking with Swami, and Swami was telling him that you finished your MBA, now you better go and get married. And especially when Swami speaks of this topic, brings up this topic, you're not sure when Swami is serious. You know, is Swami trying to, you know, pull your leg, or is Swami trying to pick your brains to see, you know, what is your response, or is Swami genuinely telling? You know, you never know what Swami is hinting at. It was a favorite jibe of Swami. You know, Swami MSc over, what should I do? MRS karo. So there was a very beautiful tussle happening there between Swami and the student. And the student was saying, no, Swami, I want to be with you. I want to serve you. Swami said, no, your parents want you to get married and things like that. So it was a little lighthearted, you know, nothing very serious. So this boy had the audacity to tell this to Swami. He said, Swami, you say that we have to follow you in everything. Swami is not married, so I am not going to marry.
Oh my God.
And he said, after he spelt it out, he was like biting his tongue. What have I said? You know, what audacity I said this. But the response of Swami was so spontaneous and so profound. You know, Swami said, hey, don't compare you and me like that. And Swami said, you know what I used to call my mother? I used to call her Grahamai. Swami said, see, I had the ability to look at my own parents as my children. You know, Swami said, I was in that state, I am in that state. I look at my own parents as my children.
Oh.
Swami said, if you reach that state, then you can compare with me.
My.
You know, what a... And he said, the spontaneity with which it came and that profoundness, no? And you know, that's... One thing is Swami saying that I am in that level, you are in this level. It's not that way. But Swami was actually trying to tell us that, you know, try to raise yourself to this level. After that, it doesn't matter what the world looks at you as. I mean, the world might look at you as a celibate or a married man or a, you know, husband of two wives or whatever it is. But I think that is where, when Swami was speaking about these five values in Yama, Swami spoke about Satya. And Swami said, your ability to stay in line with your consciousness. Because when you're talking about spirituality, you're responsible only to yourself. You know, you're going to be honest to yourself when you're talking about mind, your desires, and whether you're a celibate inside or outside. Finally, it comes to honesty. It kind of finally boils down to your honesty between you and Swami.
And I think we can, and therefore, as Swami says in the discourse also, you can maintain brahmacharya through all stages of life.
Correct.
Once God becomes your focus, once, as Brother Sai Prakash was saying, once Swami becomes the center of our lives, when everything in our lives revolves around Swami, okay, then what can stop? You know, in fact, I'll just narrate one incident that happened. So, been to Singapore, and, you know, over there, if I can say it, like, dating is a part of their
culture, right?
Their culture. You know, that's how you get to meet your soulmate or whoever. And so, you know, I was asked a question on, what does Swami have to say about this? And, you know, I have never heard, and of course the way Swami looks at it is very strict, and I didn't want that to, you know, kind of let people know that this is what Swami feels, and you better don't therefore do it. And so what spontaneously came out at that moment was, Swami has always told us to keep Him as the focus of your life. So next time you're going on a date, no, take Swami along with you. And whatever, you know, whatever you would do in Swami's presence, whatever you would speak, whatever you would think in Swami's presence, do that. And I'm sure Swami will be okay with it. You know, and so if on a table, get a third chair. You know, if both of you are sitting, get a third chair. and assume that Swami is sitting over there, okay, and then do what I'm sure Swami will guide us all along. That is one thing. The second thing I would like to share is a very nice experience about this focus, you know, and why Swami was so strict with the boys. This is something that Professor Lakshmi Narasimhan sir had shared with us, our former registrar. So this was back in the 70s when the Prashantinilayam campus was not there and only the Brindavan campus. So they would come here for all special occasions, and Swami also would spend a lot of time in Brindavan. So they had come here for the birthday season. It had been a month that since, you know, boys were here, and obviously they had enjoyed and Swami had poured so much, etc. And, you know, the day had come when all the boys had to go back to Brindavan. And Swami was in the interview room along with Professor Lakshmi Narasimhan and Kasturi Garu. And, you know, the boys were getting into the buses near the South Indian canteen. Mm-hmm. And as the buses roared, the engines roared, all of them started shouting, Jai Bolo Bhagwan Shri Sati Sai, which is the usual thing. And that roar was heard by Swami. And hearing that boys were leaving back to Brindavan, Swami was so, you know, he was so down and he was almost with tears in his eyes. And, you know, and this would happen very often because Kasturi Garu was kind of used to it. So he was immediately, you know, he was there to kind of be next to Swami, trying to tell him, assuage Swami that, Swami, you know, we are going in a few days to Brindavan.
Reassure Swami,
you know, yeah, don't cry. No, I've seen this many times. You know, and the boys themselves are going to come back soon, Swami. Shivratri, they will be here, Swami, and you know, like that. And then Swami said, hey, I am not crying for that. These last 1 month that the students were here with me, I ensured that they focused only on me. I was the center of all their lives. Now they are going back to that city. Okay, they will get distracted, which is not good for them. That is why I am disappointed.
Mm.
You just imagine, you know, most of us, when we come to Prashantinilayam, you know, Swami is the focus of everything.
Correct.
And then finally a day comes when you pack your bags. And that is what is the strange thing about human life, you know. Even while we leave from Prashantinilayam, we are, you know, we go with heavy hearts because we have had such a beautiful time. Even now, devotees say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But yet, we step into the taxi, we cross the arch, and life goes on as usual. Where does that, you know, where does that struggle, where does that pining, where is the pang of separation? Can we take it along with us, you know, to our cities, to our homes, and cry like how Mirabai cried, and cry how like Tulsidas cried, that, oh Lord, when am I going to see you again? Can we take that pangs along with us? You know, that is what I think is Brahmacharya, our ability to take Brahma with us wherever we go.
That's true. You know, slight digression again. Yes, Swami was in that way, you know, concerned about our progress. That doesn't mean he is attached to us. Excellent. Because, you know, one of the Thrai sessions, as somebody, one of our seniors was mentioning, Swami was quote-unquote just, you know, rating some of the spiritually evolved souls. And Swami was saying, yeah, Ramana Maharishi is good. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, he is very good, but too much attachment to his disciples. he should get involved that, you know, they should become better. Mm-hmm. He says, I am not attached to anybody. Swami says, I am not attached to anybody. See, the level of selflessness that, you know, he's doing everything just for your growth. That's all. He's not attached to anything else.
Correct. Swami Vivekananda says, no, love is not attachment.
Mm.
And detachment is not indifference. No, often we think when we walk past a beggar and nothing happens in our heart, that is not detachment, that is indifference. When Bhagwan would pass by any of his creation, his heart would go out.
Exactly.
That is not attachment. That is love.
That is love.
So love is not attachment and detachment is not indifference.
Probably we'll just go into a short break, but before that, about the comment which you made in Singapore. I remember once in one of our afternoon satsangs, Arvind had made a mention of that incident about this dating and things like that. And one of our listeners wrote back to us, you know, if I'm not wrong, it's Brother Mahidhar, who's a very regular writer to us with his feedback. He had written that apparently this question was asked of Phyllis Crystal, what Swami says, and she had the opportunity to ask Swami, you know, because this is a question she faces a lot of times being a Westerner and conducting workshops. And the same point which I was making, Swami had told her that what is important is the purpose. If you're going out with somebody, are you going out with the idea of marrying that person? Are you having that as the idea? Mm. You know, unless you're wishing to take a relationship forward, don't step into it. Because Swami is very clear, you know, in his, the way he brought us up, the way he insisted. You know, we can find all kinds of loopholes and say that, you know, Swami permitted such and such a person, this. But what Swami passed it on to us as what he wanted us to follow is this. Strictly, there was no concept of dating or going out with another person. But Swami said, you know, you cannot pull out people who are so entrenched in that culture. Swami said, make it purposeful. You know, don't make it like, you know, you go out to a restaurant today, here you don't like that cuisine, you go to another restaurant. It's not like that when you're involving with a person. Swami said, when you, as long as you try to ensure that you keep the purpose and the action together, at least that is one way of taking the thing to next this one. We're very grateful to that listener who, you know, we did not know about this thing that Swami had himself told Miss Crystal about this. That is one thing. So, but as you both of you very rightly said, the whole idea of Brahmacharya is this. Swami would say that one who moves around in Brahman, that's the exact meaning of the word Brahmacharya. The ability to take yourself to that state where, you know, you're not, your thinking of Swami or your being in Swami's thoughts is not place dependent, situation dependent or environment dependent. To start with that, the sapling has to be fenced.
Yes.
The whole idea is that the whole idea of putting a student through that process of celibacy, if not anything else, because that celibacy was more than just this aspect. It was about comforts. It was about other kind of attractions which would come. You know, a student or a young person who's looking at TV today is filled with so much desires. You know, you see, I mean, the way advertising is done today is to make you feel that your life is incomplete without these products.
Mm, correct.
And Swami actually removed us from that kind of exposure. I mean, now when I look back, 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, we spent without sitting for 10, 15 minutes in front of a TV at a stretch.
Correct.
And we never felt it as something which was missing in our life. But today, we can't, a person cannot think of a living room without a huge, you know, 42-inch TV.
Forget television. We didn't have fans in our rooms.
We did not.
In the hostel.
We didn't have fans and we never felt
that we needed fans.
Unbelievable.
I can't imagine
Forget others imagining how I live. I am myself not able to imagine how did I ever live in this hostel.
Right. I mean, no beds. Most of us used to, have a mat and we used to sleep on it. Especially when we were staying in Vrindavan, I think 3 months of that, 4 months of that year would be spent in Patti, where you would become even more austere. If staying in Vrindavan was not austere enough, you know, we would come here in a hall about 100 and 150 people, 3 bathrooms, 4 bathrooms shared amongst 100 people.
Mm.
Talk about community living. You know, you had to, you cannot have enemies in that group. You know, even if the person ahead of you decides to stay for a little longer in the bathroom, you know, there's no better way to take revenge against you. You know, the way Swami put in all this, so beautiful, we'll discuss. There's so much more to talk about. Take a short break and probably listen to one of those songs which we sang as students in front of Swami.
मनाते हैं बोल कर दिलाज हम ये गीत गाते हैं प्रेम के प्यासे हम साई को चाहते हैं प्रेम के प्यासे हम साई को चाहते हैं साई को चाहते हैं चाहते हैं चाहते हैं प्रेम के प्यासे हम साई को चाहते हैं प्रेम के प्यासे हम साई को चाहते हैं
प्यासे हम साई को चाहते हैं, प्रेम के प्यासे हम साई को चाहते हैं, साई को चाहते हैं, चाहते हैं, चाहते हैं, प्रेम के प्यासे हम साई को चाहते हैं, प्रेम के प्यासे हम साई को चाहते हैं।
Welcome back, dear listeners. And moving on in that discussion, I'm reminded of one particular incident which happened. One of the people in the administrative block was sharing with us, you know. This is something which probably many people don't realize who have seen Swami in the later years. In fact, even I didn't know till much later. Sometime in the year 1981 or 82, I think, when the university was began, it seems one day Swami came out of the interview room. He was having discussion with some of the elders and literally came to the portico where all the students and staff were sitting, and he declared, Swami said, henceforth my college will be free. He said, because till then there was a nominal fees which is being charged, and from that point of time Swami said it's going to be free, we're not going to charge anything. But what Swami told during that period was very significant. Swami said, let us not take money from our students. And immediately Swami said, staff, don't need to worry, I'll pay you. I am giving free, it doesn't matter, it doesn't mean that you have to give your services free. So then Swami said, see, if we don't charge them, we can give them what has to be given. If you charge them, you're giving them the right to demand.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes. And in many ways, I think those people who would like to replicate the system, this is something you have to keep in mind. Not necessarily it has to be given free, but are you able to create a system where you are able to make the person receiving feel a sense of responsibility.
Correct.
Rather than a sense of entitlement. And I think many of the colleges and schools face this, you know, when you pay enormous amounts of money as capitation fees or for tuition fees, you're giving that person a sense of, you know, entitlement, and you should give me what I deserve, because he becomes a customer.
Correct.
But in many ways, Swami always maintained and Swami always reiterated and reminded students that, you know, you are getting a largesse from the society. Swami said, I have no money. I don't even have a pocket. Swami would say, this is all devotees' money and you are getting education out of it. Remember that at some point you have to go back and give something back to the society. Swami always ensured that sense of responsibility was always built into the student's psyche and character.
I think that also plays a very important role why the free education model actually is a very, very workable model. is even from a student's perspective, the moment he passes out from the college, there is no Demolicus, you know, sword hanging over him to pay back the enormous amount that he would have probably taken on loan. So just imagine, we have MBA graduates over here who otherwise get placed anyway in about 3 or 4 months. But even those 3 or 4 months, as they are, you know, looking out for jobs, this burden of having taken a loan, typically in India, you need about a loan of about 600,000 rupees to do your MBA.
Mm.
Right? So you would have taken that much. And so the first thing in your mind is, how am I going to get back? So rather than the knowledge that is being given in the college, all the time you're thinking about, oh my God, I have to pay this, I have to pay this back. And that is why the placements in most other institutes start 1 year in advance. Right. Whereas in Swami's university, again, coming back to the focus that we were talking about, Swami, he did not want placements in our university for this very reason, that if you're going to get placed 1 year from now, you're going to lose focus. Your focus is going to be on the job that you're going to get afterwards. You have not come here for that. You have come here to focus on a spiritual life, to focus on Swami. Right? So I think the free model, and this is what I keep telling the boys also, many of the boys, obviously, some of them will we get jobs soon?
Mm.
And so, my first question to them is, what is the necessity? Means, are you in, dearth of money?
Mm.
You have got your education free of cost.
Mm.
Right? Even if you have to sit home for a month, it's not going to affect you.
Mm.
And I think this is a great, boon that Swami has given, that I don't have any burden on me even as I pass out of the portals of this university. I don't have loans to pay, I don't have, just imagine getting an MBA free of cost or an MTech free of cost.
Mm.
How much of burden less on the parents? They wouldn't have had to shell out enormous amounts of money, to educate their son. So they are also better off, the student is well off, It's a win-win kind of situation, I feel.
And in many ways, I think even the disciplines in the hostel, and probably one more activity we'll talk about now, when we joined, I think even when I joined for the undergraduate, it would be made very clear that, this, you are being given free education, these are our rules, there are no compromises on this. If you want, you come in. Don't come in and then crib and question. And I think that can be done only when there is a higher wisdom which has put everything in place. Probably towards the end of the thing, we'll come to that. It all boils down to faith. Swami, when he said, you focus on me, Swami said, you do it for me, when he made himself the center of every activity here. And even when he says that you don't have to do anything else, do just, follow the hostel schedule. It all finally boils down to the faith that you have in Swami's words. And I think that was what Swami wanted, even in the process of all these things. I have created this. Do you have the faith that this will work for you? Don't with our half a penny intelligence and reasoning, we start questioning Swami's wisdom, which is the silliest thing to do. But this was the thing which Swami placed. And in many ways, when you give it free, you said you take it or you leave it. Don't come in and try to question.
Yeah, in fact, we are asked to sign a, having understood all the rules and regulations, you have to put your signature below.
Okay.
So it's like an agreement that you're signing, that I have understood what this institute expects of me.
Mm-hmm.
It should become very, very, smooth for a person who knows what he is getting into. That's number one. I think the other thing that I wanted to talk about discipline is, you were talking about the concept of faith. I think the faith also can come from the kind of students who have passed out from here.
Correct.
And how well they are doing today in their professional careers, their personal lives, as well as their spiritual lives.
Mm.
I just like to give a small, this is such a small example, it's got actually nothing to do with Swami per se. Here's an old student who had recently won a big prize in his office. And so he was talking to us about, the award and all that. So he says one of the first awards that he got was when his manager called him and just told him one thing in front of everybody, in the team meeting. So-and-so, how is it that you're able to sit for 6-7 hours non-stop and work while everybody takes a coffee break and a tea break at the end of 1 hour?
Mm.
And he said, my mind went back to Kulwant Hall. And we used to sit for 3 hours in Mandir. As Swami, sometimes waiting for Swami, sometimes after the darshan, Swami would go in for long interviews. And our typical time that to sit in Kulwant Hall was 3 hours.
Correct.
Right? Just imagine an insignificant thing of just sitting in Kulwant Hall. We are not talking about some big spiritual matters and all that. Simply the habit of sitting in Kulwant Hall gave him the ability to sit for long hours and be productive at work. You know, and I felt so, Swami, what a thing you have created. Just imagine, a guy gets recognized because his ability to sit for long hours at work. You know, such is your grace that you have simply made us sit in Kulwant Hall and we are thinking, oh my God, you know, how much more time am I going to sit, etc., etc. Even that Swami is telling, I will pay you back for it. You know, I won't take anything free from you. I'm making you sit in Kulwant Hall, tomorrow you will get recognized for it. So, you know, the discipline. Where else, for example, can you see, when I see the primary school children sitting, I see the Ishwarama school children sitting. It's unbelievable, you know. Correct. It's a miracle actually happening out there. Mm. 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, you know, at the peak of their restlessness, you know, they're sitting quietly for about 45 minutes, an hour, hour and a half. Of course, our time, about 3-4 hours, right? Impossible, because I see my nephews, okay, and they're so fidgety and so restless. Correct. They're just not able to sit for, you know, X amount of time, even 10 minutes, 15 minutes, they are not able to sit. They want to run or they need an iPad, you know. And here are these little children able to sit. You know, that is discipline.
I think I'm reminded of once when I was in my master's, one of the old students, what you said, you know, it's a very important point. The ability for us to look at some of those people who have gone through the system and come back and tell us, you know, it's worked in so many ways which we didn't realize it will help us. I remember this student came back. He was also a student of chemistry. He apparently joined one field of chemistry, inorganic synthesis. And he came back and he was a phenomenal success. You know, he had become one of the star performers in his university which he had gone. I think he was in Switzerland or something. And Switzerland was sending him to MIT. So when he came back, he was telling, you know, very, very frankly was speaking, he said, when I was in our university, I was second from the bottom in the class. And he said, there I am the star. And he said, it's very simple. In the field where he was working, in a span of about 3.5 years, if you synthesize 45 compounds, and you're worth a PhD. Okay, and this boy had worked for 1 year in that university, and he had synthesized 85 compounds.
Whoa.
It's a record over there. And he said, it's very simple. I did not do anything. Because he said, I am used to a schedule where my Sunday is busier than the other days. He said, because here, Sunday you get up earlier than usual because you have to go for morning darshan. Mm. And the whole day you have something or the other running. And it's not a stress. Somehow without our knowledge, you know, Sundays will come to that point. So he said he was a boy who used to work in the maintenance. So Sunday is the day whole day we were working the maintenance. Swami had not only told us the change of work is rest, but he had made us live it without our knowledge. So he said, when I go back to my university, when I go to that university in Switzerland, I find that nobody is able to work beyond 2 o'clock on a Friday. ever expanding weekend, what was only a Sunday has become a Saturday and Sunday, and now it's like Friday, half a day it goes off. He says, and the mood for a holiday sets in even, you know, when you walk in for a Friday, your work. But for me, I had no problems working on a Saturday and Sunday. And he said, before anybody else could realize, I had actually done so much.
Correct.
And he said, some of these things, you know, get inbuilt in us.
Yeah, I can maybe mention one other point. Coming to our self-reliance departments also, which is so connected to. So there was this brother, name is Sagar. He was doing his master's in economics. And part of in the hostel, so we need to pick up a self-reliance department. I'm not sure whether.
No, I think we need to introduce the self-reliance department.
So basically, our hostel is like by the students, of the students, for the students.
Right.
It's a perfect democracy in a sense, without the election process, of course. So everything in the hostel, Swami always wanted boys to do it, whether it's plumbing, whether it is electrical works, whether it is cooking for the sick boys, the stores. The costumes for the dramas, everything is done by the students. And so every student who joins the institute has to pick one of these self-reliance departments. So there's one department called the multimedia where students get to learn editing, video editing and things like that, which is done in Radio Sai. So this boy had in fact done a whole lot of video editing. He was very good at it, also doing his master's in economics.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually he gets into a company where he is one of the economists, and he happens to be talking to one of his corporate clients.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the client was talking to him about his work, and side by side his client was also getting some other work done.
Mm.
So he just casually asked his client, what is it, you know, what is the issue? He says, no, see, we've been working on a corporate documentary for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's just been stuck at this place and we really don't know what to do.
Mm.
So this person says, you know, why don't you, can you, is it possible you can just send me over this corporate documentary? I'll try to work on it. You just see, you know, if this is useful. And you know, this economist does the video editing for the corporate documentary of that company. Okay. And those people are stunned.
Mm.
They came back and told the CEO of this company where this brother was working, what kind of people you have in your in your office? An economist knows how to do video editing? You know, and that CEO was, when he had come to Prashantilayam, he was telling, what kind of an institute it is? You know, where an economics guy knows. And so he wanted to come to the hostel to know what is this model?
Mm.
How is this happening? You know, an economist, so just imagine, the client was so happy with this company that I'm getting a value added service here.
Correct.
For no cost.
Mm.
Okay. And I'm also getting my work done, you know. Mm. So they were thrilled. And so in fact, the relation between the client and this organization have grown. And so the CEO is mighty happy now.
I think one of the things, probably it's a different point altogether, but we'll mention it here because I'm reminded of something. One thing which really works in a hostel, if you look at it, is the ability for us not only to see the people who have gone through the system, but people who are still living in the system, but who are not necessarily bound by the system, in the sense of our teachers and our seniors, who are not, you know, it's not mandatory for them to follow the schedule as we follow it, but they still follow it. And when you're talking about self-reliance, each of the teacher takes in charge of one of the departments. I'm reminded of a slightly funny incident which one of my juniors once shared with me, and you know how it was a comical situation, but still a situation where he learnt a lot. Apparently, I think one day there was some feast in the hostel and he had eaten more than he should have eaten. We spoke about ahimsa, he did not follow it that day. And he had an upset stomach in the middle of the night. Okay. He had to visit the toilet a couple of times late in the night. So he said sometime around 1 o'clock, 1:30, he had to wake up from sleep and run to the toilet. Imagine 1:30 in the night. He runs into the toilet and what does he see? He sees the warden of the hostel. This happened in the school. The warden of the hostel had passed 1 o'clock. He's sitting there and repairing one of the taps.
Oh.
And you know, he's doing it because that's the only time he has, because he's so busy throughout the day. And there was a tap which was leaking, which had to be fixed. You can't wait till the morning till one of the students who is in the department comes and fixes. And he was saying that, you know, his situation was very bad. He could not go and help him. But you know, he's least bothered that anybody should know that he's doing that job. But at the same time, you know, that commitment. He says, when you look at it, what kind of an impact it will leave on a student who's in 10th or 11th standard, who sees a teacher who is 55 years old,
probably
doing that
PhD.
Right, probably a PhD, and who's you know, well qualified to be a principal of the school, and he's the warden of the hostel who is doing that activity there.
I think I totally agree with this. In fact, you know, taking from what you said, we currently have one of our, you know, PhD brothers who is maintaining all the taps, you know, and because we have water shortage in Prashant Puttaparthi, it becomes so critical. Mm. So water maintenance and the it used to be called the tap maintenance, but then they, you know, had to increase the scope, and so they call it the water management services now. You know, and his job is so critical,
mm-hmm,
that in fact he has to run from his lab, you know, in the college, to, you know, fix up. If some tap breaks somewhere and water is gushing out, he has to leave his experiment in the middle and come and repair it. And when young boys, you know, graduate boys see a PhD student, someone who's going to doing his PhD, sitting and repairing taps in, you know, in toilets and in bathrooms. To me, of course, you know, I just get tears in my eyes, because this boy also is such a wonderful person. At any time, You know, I remember during the summer holidays time, we happened to be here just few months back, these summer holidays. And you know, there was water just leaking from a tap, and it was late in the night at about 1 o'clock. I had gone to the toilet and I could not bear to see, you know, summertime, Parthi doesn't have water and here is water just pouring forth. So I went and woke up. I don't mind saying his name is Mukul Anand. And so I went and woke up Mukul and I said, I'm really sorry to disturb you here, but this water is thing. And you know, he repaired it. He sat up to 3 o'clock and he repaired that, you know, that valve. He says, ha, brother, that keeps breaking. We need to get, because when the water finally comes, it comes with so much pressure that these valves are breaking. So we keep repairing them. But he sat there, you know. He could have, might as well told me, I know the issue. I'll look at it tomorrow morning. But he did not, you know. And I think when youngsters see this kind of a, and I think that's one more very unique thing about our institute, and that is the senior-junior, you know, relationship. Where you see a senior working like this, the juniors are automatically, you know, motivated.
The dignity of labor, then teamwork, everything comes into play.
Absolutely.
There's no...
Yeah.
And I think one thing which Swami used to often repeat, especially in discourses, not just for students. Swami would say, what is needed for today is people who can set examples. Absolutely. You know, it's not about people who can explain, and people who can talk
walk
like you
talk.
And me.
Walk the talk.
Swami would say, people, you know, adarshavantulu kavali. Swami would say, people who can stand up as ideals.
Yeah, and I think none other than Swami himself has
absolutely
shown it time and again.
Correct.
I have one very touching incident comes to my mind, in the sense, this is something that our sirs had told in Kodaikanal. You know, Swami will walk in between the dining tables, you know, to see if everybody's eating. And so at the far end of the dining hall is the are the taps. And so he noticed that in the basin, you know, there were some food particles still left. It was not clean. And so Swami simply, you know, looked at it and said, hey, galijga undi, you know, it's become... And so obviously the moment Swami says something, five fellows will run in five directions. But the five boys had run into the kitchen to get something, you know. In the meantime, Swami had simply folded up his, you know, his robe, opened the tap, and with his hand had cleaned the basin. And Swami said, why do you need that? Just take soap after that and wash it, and what is needs to be done has to be done. See, this is God. This is Swami himself showing. And we are not talking about just God. We are talking about a 60-65 year old person. You know, someone, even age wise he was elderly. Of course, Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram often narrates this experience of that Akhanda Bhajan time, when Swami himself was arranging slippers outside, devotee slippers he was arranging, when bhajan for him, he is the presiding deity over that Akhanda Bhajan, you know, is being organized inside the hall, the Lord, okay, is sitting and arranging chappals outside. So I think, you know, he set the standard, he has set the benchmark, and you know, it's just about...
Really, in a way, what we've seen it being passed on, I remember some of these old devotees would say, you know, Swami has put this rule in the ashram that after 9 o'clock, light should not be on. Even in Swami's room, let's say that Swami is leaving early morning the next day, you know, going to Vrindavan or something like that. If Swami has some work in his room, Swami would do it with a torchlight. Swami would not, you know, switch on the light, because Swami would say that it's a rule I have given, I'll have to follow. And we have seen some of the teachers in the hostel follow it. You know, our Nageshwarao sir is there. He's in charge of the dispensary in the hostel. And sometime late in the night, if you go and wake him up and say, sir, this student is sick and he needs some medicines, you would see that he will take a torch and he'll search for the medicine. You know, really we saw it that Swami was setting an example. We had these seniors and teachers who were taking that example and they were living it, and we were able to learn from them. You know, it was such a beautiful system that Swami created. And as Amai was saying, that this one aspect of the educational system, especially the hostel, where Swami insisted that the teachers and the seniors stay together. You know, even a room is always constituted about seniors and juniors put together in the room.
When the juniors see, you know, a 50-year-old living in the similar room,
correct,
you know, matching the same lifestyle, it makes a tremendous impact on the student. He knows that, yeah, hey, this is a person I can trust because he lives the same life, and yet he's notches ahead, you know, of following discipline or doing some work. You know, you'll find some of our very elderly professors, you know, wearing the jogging dress and jogging at the age of 60, 65. It's not necessary for them to jog, and yet they do the jogging because they have to set an example. You know, so if a 65-year-old can jog, definitely a 16-year-old can jog. You know, so you have definitely no excuse from not jogging, you know, kind of.
Really amazing.
Yeah, especially, yeah. I think, Saprakash will be able to tell us, because in the school that distance is more, I mean, age-wise,
yeah,
when you have some of these senior teachers.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the energy of school children is so tremendous. And they're very promptly, they ask, sir, why you are not jogging? you know, after the age of 30, 35, you need privacy, you need, you know, your body doesn't, can't, and people at 50 and 60, how they are able to cope up with the schedule and energy levels of a school child, it's really amazing. It's only
great. I think it's just, I mean, sheerly Swami's energy that is flowing through all these teachers.
Yeah.
It's you can see it, you can see it. Otherwise, it's physically impossible for retired, I mean, people who otherwise retire outside,
correct,
you know, continuing to be a part of the educational institution.
Right. Probably we'll have to end with a small comments from each of you probably. And, you know, this is all said and done. I remember once when we had the Vice Chancellor's Conference, one of the Vice Chancellors were speaking towards the end of the sessions. And, I'm sorry, Vice Chancellor's Conference or the UGC's visit.
Mm-hmm.
One of these events, I'm not sure which one was it, and they were all giving their concluding remarks, and one of the agendas was, what is it that really works for the Satyasai University? Can you replicate it elsewhere? And I remember one of those seniors who had come, he said an emphatic no. He said, we cannot do this anywhere else. He said, the only way other universities can be like this is if we have 200 Satyasai Babas. He said, no other way it happens, because as you said, the whole concept is because he has made himself the center of the, not just the individuals who are here, but the whole system, the whole structure, the whole, you know, the whole thing is centered around him. But having said that, if there is somebody who would like to take this wisdom of the structure and the wisdom of this system and replicate it at least to 2%, 3% outside, what is it that we can take from the system and say that, you know, we would like this to be part of it?
I think, to me, you know, there was one, I think when the hostel or the university was inaugurated, there was one statement that Swami says, which we all know, which is like, you know, it's there in our hostel, that discipline is the medium of instruction. In this university, discipline is the medium of instruction. And the first, second and third languages are love, service and sadhana.
Correct.
You know, nowhere does God come in this, believe me, right? In this statement, you know, in this university, discipline is the medium of instruction. So for Swami, in fact, I remember when Shivshankar Sai sir was telling us, the former warden, that when Swami had once called all the teachers inside and one by one he was asking, what subject do you teach, what subject? And then Swami asked, who teaches my subject? You know, everybody was like stunned, because what is Swami's? So then Swami asked, what is my subject? Then everybody, Atma Jnana and spirituality and all of that. And Swami said, no, discipline is my subject. You know, for Swami, discipline comes even before devotion. Because he says that devotion is like the, you know, like a river which flows. But discipline are like the two bonds which go along with devotion. If those two bonds are not there, the same, you know, the flow of devotion can become destructive. So when you have a flood and the bonds are overthrown, the same otherwise nourishing river becomes life-destroying river. So even devotion can become destroying if it is not within the bonds of discipline. So for Swami, even more important than devotion was discipline. And that is why he says, one with good manners is a man, one with good behavior is a boy, and one with good discipline is a devotee. He doesn't say one with good devotion. This is there in one of the three discourses. You
beautiful,
know?
Beautiful.
Right? So it is about our ability to, you know, remain focused. And so I think discipline, and then of course the other three are such beautiful terms. First, second and third languages are love, service and sadhana. I think if this one element we are able to take from Swami's institute, this is definitely replicable. I mean, to say that this is not replicable, I think is insulting Swami, number one. Because you're trying to say that, you know what, this happens only here. This is a one-off case. And nothing of what God does can be a one-off case. You know, because these are models for humanity, to this thing, number one. Number two, I feel like saying that, you know, it's an escapist attitude to say that this cannot be replicated. You know, Swami did not use any of his divine powers to set up this institute. Right? Though he gave us divine experiences, every brick, mortar, every person who has come here, and it is not that it is absolutely, you know, we are hunky-dory life here. We have our own challenges. I am sure every institution, you know, has, every Satyasai institution has tremendous issues, you know, its own upheavals. But everybody is at the end of the day, you know, not, I mean, fully aware of the thing that it is in his hands. He knows what to do with it. So as long as that awareness is there, that, in fact, when I joined primary school, I remember when my mother was begging Swami to take me into primary school, myself and my sister. I said, Swami, please, Swami, your school, Swami, your school, Swami. And Swami, you know what he said? All schools are my schools. Which is so true.
You can't deny.
Yeah, which is so true. Mm. You know? So, in fact, if we believe that all universities are Swami's universities, all schools are Swami's schools, then where can we not replicate it? It requires good leadership, you know, an evangelical leadership. It requires discipline, it requires love, service and sadhana.
As you said, we tend to always confuse between indifference and detachment. I think we also confuse between adoration and laziness, I think, and escapism. You're yeah. saying that no, nobody can do what Swami did, but that's what you're supposed to do. That's why I
did. Exactly. That's the precise reason why this is a Saraswati Mandir. You know, on all other institutions have become Lakshmi Mandir, so as Swami used to say.
Correct.
Right. So thank you, Amai, for joining us. Of course, no thanks to Sai Prakash, he's one of us. And 3 weeks we've gone through, and I'm sure that, you know, as you said, it's not that there are no problems in the universities here. It's absolutely, we have no issues. I mean, let's not give that kind of a picture to the listeners.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, a system will not be perfect if it does not have problems.
Yeah, because human beings are.
Right.
Problems will be.
Right. I mean, you can't think of a perfect system where you don't have situations and challenges where, as Swami would say, that those are opportunities for you to chisel yourself. So there is no perfect system without challenges. So there are challenges. So, you know, we are talking about the best aspects of it. So if you are trying to, you know, try to replicate the system and you feel face challenges, don't think that, oh, this is a sign that it cannot be done. You know, take it into consideration that we too also have challenges, and, you know, the whole thing happens like that. We do hope that we've given a fair bit of idea about what we have gone through as students. There's definitely much, much more. We would like to hear from you what you think about this discussion. We've had it for past 3 weeks. So on behalf of Sai Prakash, on behalf of Amai, on behalf of myself, we offer this humble effort of ours at Swami's lotus feet, and we thank him for this opportunity. We're going to leave you with another song. On the other side of it, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu Vijay with his program Love to Love.
तुझे हर दम प्यार में तेरे दिल हमारे चाहे तुझे हर दम जीना नहीं है तेरे बिन कहीं देखा तुझे तो प्यार को जाना सही जीना नहीं है तेरे बिन कहीं देखा तुझे जाना चाहिए जीवन की मंजिल तुम्हें हो सारी चाहे तुझे हर दम प्यार में तेरे चाहे तुझे हर दम तेरे तू मेरे सांसों के संगम शाम सवेरे नाम ले तेरे तू मेरे सांसों के संगम दिल की धड़कन तुम्हें हो दम प्यार में तेरे चाहे तुझे हर दम जिया नहीं है तेरे बिन कहीं देखा तुझे तो प्यार को जाना चाहिए जीवन की मंदिर से गुस्साए चाहे तुझे हर